Hey friends, Peggy Hall back with you from thehealthyamerican.org. I have an interview. Actually, this is part one of an interview that I have with a healthy American who has been in the battle for educating people about the harms of these cocktails that are inflicted, especially upon children. And she's going to share her personal story, and she will tell you what she's been going through, how she has been fighting, the frustrations that she's come up upon. And we connected because she's been a healthy American for many years. But when I started to speak about the confusion, I guess is the best word to use, about RFK Jr. and his stance about these cocktails, where many people believe that he is anti-cocktail. And in fact, he himself has stated that he's not, that he's very vigorously, and I think he uses the word fiercely, pro-vaccine. And that has caused confusion for people because he is calling for more testing of these poisons. And I want to share with you what my friend and healthy American Laura Hayes says about that. And before I do want to thank the sponsor of this video. Friends, we are here at noblegoldinvestments.com, and here's the hard truth. Every 6 years, your dollar loses half its buying power. That $100,000 in your savings account today, it could feel like $50,000 by 2031, but there is a way to protect and preserve your money. Gold. Noble Gold Investments makes it easy to own physical gold or silver. No pressure, no call centers, just honest one-on-one support. Open a qualified account and get a free 10-ounce silver American flag bar. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com. I would love for you to give them a call. Get your questions answered by the experts at 877-646-5347. That's noblegoldinvestments.com. I've got a link for you in the description box along with the disclaimer. There's always a risk of any kind of investment. Of course, there's no guarantee. So get your questions answered by the experts, noblegoldinvestments.com. Friends, you're about to hear from a healthy American and a mom who has a child who has an injury from the cocktails. She's going to tell her story of advocacy, what she's been through. And I know that you are going to find this very inspiring. This is part one of a two-part interview, and I will have the other one for you tomorrow since it's quite lengthy. And this is information that you don't want to miss. And it's great information that you can share with other parents if they are concerned about keeping their children healthy and keeping their bodies pure and not becoming human pincushions. Hey friends, Peggy Hall back with you from thehealthyamerican.org. You are going to love this interview with healthy American freedom fighter, mom of an autistic son, and someone who's been on the front lines of, I will just call it medical and health freedom. We'll just call it freedom. This is Laura Hayes. Laura, it is so great to connect with you here on this interview, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm just thrilled and honored to be here. It's very exciting to meet you in person on camera here. So I'm so I'm such an admirer of your work and your steadfastness and your unwillingness to compromise on that which we can't compromise. So it's just an honor to be on your show. So thank you for having me.
Well, thank you, Laura. I want to give a little bit of an introduction to our audience here. And I like that phrase that you just used. We have to be uncompromising. People said to me early on, Peggy, you're so divisive. And I thought about it and I said, I really am. I divide deception from truth. I divide the wrongs from the right and those that are living in the fantasy land and reality. So yes, that is divisive, and we do need to take a stand. Friends, Laura Hayes writes and speaks about the importance of healthcare, medical choice, freedom, and very importantly, parental rights. We both have our home state of California, and California has been the battleground for the government taking the role of parents. We'll be talking about that. Laura has been outspoken for many years regarding the urgent need to immediately ban the, you know, that word, mandates for cooties and the cocktail and any kind of other medical interventions that we have the right of no consent. She speaks about enacting a moratorium on each and every cocktail. That's the word that I use here to kind of outsmart the algorithm, because none have really been tested. Actually, none has been tested or approved properly or ethically. And Laura agrees with me that even if they have been approved and tested, we still have the right of no consent. She speaks about repealing the 1986 Act, which we can get into a little bit. And she speaks about the full restoration of individual and parental rights with regard to healthcare and medical decision making. I also love that phrase, without any government interference, coercion, penalty, or cost. So you can read more of her work at the Age of Autism Exclusives. I will have a link for you in the description box below. And before we dive in, Laura, I want to thank you because you sent a lengthy response to a video I had about this Twitter brouhaha where RFK Jr. and Joe Rogan were asking and really, I would say, pushing for Peter Hotez, I call him the cartoon scientist, to have a debate about the safety and efficacy of these cocktails. And I did a video saying they're barking up the wrong tree. This argument of whether or not these cocktails are safe has nothing. It's completely off the mark. The argument and the issue is no one, including the government, especially the government, has any authority to tell me as an adult what to do related to medicine, injections, any of that. And the government has no authority to tell you as a parent what to do with your child. So your response was so great. It was a link, and I'll have that for everyone, a link to a blog post that you wrote on this very topic. And friends, that's how Laura and I got connected. I said, I have got to interview you and share this information. So where would you like to start off?
Well, I want to just follow up on one thing you just said. I think an important question for people to ask themselves is, if you don't have the right to decide what you permit or don't permit into your own body and the bodies of your children, what meaningful right do you have? I mean, what meaningful rights do you have? If people can invade your bodily sovereignty and inject all types of witches' brews of heinous ingredients, toxins, poisons, what meaningful rights do you have? And when we look at the state of our children and their incredibly ill health, their terrible and improper development, their rates of cancer, the rates of autism and learning disabilities and speech delays and tics and juvenile rheumatoid arthritis and type 1 diabetes and Crohn's disease and food allergies and life-threatening peanut allergies. I mean, the list is endless and it's not normal. This is not how childhood is supposed to be. It wasn't this way. This is a new phenomenon. It started in the late 80s, and there are so many new epidemics of childhood, and they're getting worse. And so it's very important that we reclaim this right over our own bodies and the bodies of our children. We are in charge. We are in charge of our own health care, our family's health care. No one should be able to violate our God-given right to decide what type of choices we make with regard to healthcare for our own bodies and those of our children. So really ask yourselves, if we don't have that right, what meaningful rights do we have?
Right. I mean,
if the government can force inject you, and right now it's mandates, which end up restricting people from participating in society, whether you can't go to the school you want, whether you can't get the job you want, whether you can't get government assistance if you need it, whether you want to foster a child but can't if you are unwilling to take that child in and knowingly poison them at regular intervals per the state's requirements. You know, this is just a right. These are rights we've got to reclaim.
Before we talk about your background and how you got involved in all of this and your personal story, which is so, on the one hand, heart-wrenching and devastating, and on the other hand, inspiring and encouraging, especially for other parents that might find themselves in a similar situation, or grandparents who may be concerned about their grandchildren. They're one step away of that parental control. But before we do that, I just want to highlight what you said, because this is
the issue. And I've gone on record to say, I don't even care if these cocktails contain chocolate syrup. I used to call it Hershey's chocolate syrup, yeah. But that company went woke. Yeah. I don't even care if these cocktails keep me alive until I'm 120 with nary a sniffle. I still have the right to decide what medical interventions I allow and don't allow, period. The fact that they are heinous and poisonous and damaging is an additional insult to already these assaults on our body, our minds, our spirit. Laura, you're a woman of faith as I am, and we know that this is a deeper battle, a battle for the soul to separate, I really believe, to try to separate us from God, which will not happen to a person who has a strong sense of their faith, who has that, again, that line that they are not going to cross. So let's rewind a little bit. Take us back several years with your story and how this unfolded and how you got involved in this fight.
So I have three children, and they were born in 92, 94, and 96. And I really didn't know anything about vaccinations. I took my daughter in for her first well baby visit, such a misnomer. Children go to these well baby visits never to be well again after being vaccinated. And, you know, she'd been weighed, measured, and all the things. And I look back, it's like, why did I even take her to these visits? She was healthy. I knew she was growing. And I think that is a question parents need to ask themselves. Why are you even taking your children to a pediatrician?
When I grew up, there was no such thing.
You went to the doctor when you were sick.
That's right. There was no such thing as a well visit. It was very strange.
So I thought the appointment was over. I started bundling her up and packing up the diaper bag. And the pediatrician, who was in Northern California, said, wait, it's time for her shots. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about, but she doesn't need any shots and we're not getting them. And she just looked horrified. And I grabbed my baby and I started heading out, and she followed me back to the waiting room and kind of grabbed my elbow and said, sit here. She went and got this little sheet of paper that she had typed up with like three sentences, just saying vaccines are safe and effective. They've saved millions of lives. One in a million children will have a minor adverse reaction like a fever. And she took her next patient, and you know, every fiber of my being was screaming, saying, leave. My heart was racing. I was sweating. I just knew, but I didn't listen. And this is one thing I try to coach young women. Listen to your maternal instincts. And she came back out, literally grabbed my elbow, took me back to the room and said, it's time for her shots. And I caved. I complied. And then after that, I just didn't look back. It was before the internet, but I'm a reader. I'm a researcher. And there was copious information out at that time, had I only known to look. And it's one of those things, if I had a do-over, because by starting to vaccinate her, then when I had my two boys, I continued along until our middle child. I woke up one day before his second birthday and thought, there's something wrong with him. The word autism actually was like a neon light when I woke up one Sunday morning. And I'm like, why is that word in my head when I wake up? I had learned about that back in college in the 80s and never thought of that word again. And I looked it up in an old encyclopedia and I thought, oh, this is our son, Ryan. And so it didn't take too much longer after that, about another year of vaccinating all three of our children. But when Ryan was four, that was the end of his vaccines, but the damage had been done. And I wrote about what happened to him. If you go to that ageofautism.com and on the homepage, there's a tab at the top called Special Reports. If you click on it, all of my publicly available work drops down. And on Age of Autism, it's listed as my W. Weston A. Price Foundation speech. The title is Vaccines, What Is There to Be Pro About? And I would argue nothing. And the last third of that presentation goes over detail by detail what happened to our son, Ryan, after each and every set of vaccines. He lost skills. He developed strange behaviors. He lost his speaking ability. And when I would bring up these issues and questions with the pediatrician, she would attack my mothering. I was a stay-home mother. I loved hanging out with my children. I spent all day, all night with them. And she would ask me questions like, well, do you ever spend any time with him? Do you ever sit on the floor and read to him? And then when he couldn't understand her instructions because he was brain damaged by this point, She said, is he always this naughty? And I said, he's never naughty. He's actually too good, as I've already discussed with you. But I give Ryan's history in that 80-minute speech I gave at the Weston A. Price Conference 1 year. And it's the story of so many parents. You start off with a healthy child and you unfortunately take them for regular and frequent poisonings. And it can be a long time before you make the connection, especially when your doctor dismisses you, ignores you, attacks your mothering. But now there's so much more information out there. I just feel like the information is there. Parents spend so much time researching everything from car seats to cribs to all types of things. And it is very hard to get them to research on vaccines. And this continues to happen to me time again. I will share my presentations and my work with pregnant women, including at our church. And I never get a response, or not never. It's so hard to get people to take an interest. They just don't want to do the work of having to maybe challenge what their OBGYN and their pediatrician are telling them. But ladies and you know, mothers and fathers, you must do the work. It's the most important thing you will do, because if you don't, it's not if, but when your child's vaccine injuries begin to manifest, you will be fully responsible. And I do believe that everyone who gets vaccinated has some level of injury. And whether you develop allergies, whether you start to have GI issues, and they're not always immediate. If you look at all the young ladies in their 20s right now, it's hard to find one that doesn't have GI issues and anxiety. If you look at men, young men in their 20s, it's hard to find men who don't have some issues socially, cognitively, independence-wise, or full-on developmental disabilities. We have injured generations of children now. And when the numbers of autism are up to one in, I don't know if you hear all types, whether it's one in 34, one in 36, one in 22 in the state of California, higher in New Jersey, this should make people just stop dead in their tracks and say, this is our most pressing concern. We have to stop the destruction of our own children. So,
well, Laura, people will ask me, what can I tell other people, or what is a summary of this? So I want everyone listening to know that the link that you can go to below with Laura's presentation, she is breaking that down step by step, what happened to her son. He was fine before the series of poison, correct? He was a normal little boy developing. Yes. Until going to these well baby visits, and over the series of time, a period of time, then you realized, oh my gosh, this is... How did you make that connection that it was with the poison shots?
I started hearing, we went to a conference right after I diagnosed Ryan first, but then had to get it confirmed by a neurologist in order to start services in California. But we went to a conference of other parents. And at that point, people were talking about yeast overgrowth. So I just started hearing stuff. And then I got very involved in it. And Mark Blaxel did some great work at the end of the 90s, and also Rick Rollins of Granite Bay, California. What they discovered is that in Brick Township, New Jersey, which is blue collar, East Coast industrial, and Granite Bay, California, West Coast, white collar, non-industrial, the rates of autism had gone from 1 in 10,000 back in the 80s. They were 1 in 132 and 1 in 136. In two totally different places and in just a short number of years, you know, during the 90s. And so these two fathers kind of kibbutzed and were like, okay, this bears research. These numbers are going up everywhere. What's a common denominator? Vaccines. In the late 80s, after the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, when those who manufacture and administer vaccines were granted liability and could no longer be sued for injury or death caused by their products or by administering those products, the vaccine schedule for children tripled nearly overnight. And that's when we started seeing these new epidemics of childhood, the autism, the tics, the speech delays or no speech at all, the strange behaviors, the learning disabilities, the peanut allergies, the food allergies. I mean, think about it. when we went to school, we didn't have kids who couldn't eat a whole list of foods. We didn't have, the nurse's office wasn't filled with inhalers and EpiPens and lists of special diets and pharmaceuticals. I mean, it is crazy, and this is not normal. And it's not normal to have your child go to OT twice a week. That's occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy, have behavioral therapists working with them. These things are not normal, but they have become normal. And it's that slippery slope of normalizing everything. And one thing that's become normalized is, I wouldn't say normalized, but one thing that's an interesting point to bring up is if you were to call me over and babysit your child or grandchild, and I put in the bottle, the baby bottle of milk, all the things that are in those vials of vaccines and fed it to your baby or grandbaby, and I told you that I did that and I told you what I put in, you'd call 911, you'd call the cops, I would get arrested and I'd go to jail. Truly, truly, if I put in all these heavy metals, these poisons, formaldehyde, polysorbate 80, Triton X100, phenol, and I just put all these poisons and toxins into a bottle and fed it to your child, I would go to jail. Now, your child would have a much better chance of passing all of that poison and toxin, all the poisons and toxins through their digestive tract. They might actually get some of it out. When you allow someone in a white coat to inject your child, that stuff is going into a closed system. And why is it that it is somehow legal for those wearing white coats with the label of doctor, nurse, or pharmacist? Why is it legal for them to inject literal toxins and poisons, things that have, material safety data sheets, things that are so in excess of declared safe levels of metals, and things like detergents and antifreeze? And the list is so heinous and so long. But somehow when someone walks in a white coat, it's legal for them to do that. It defies imagination once you understand what's actually going on. And if we could just get parents to realize that, like, you wouldn't let me put this stuff in a bottle. I guarantee you, if I laid out all these ingredients and I said, I'm going to put these in a bottle and give them to your child now, there, you would never allow it. But why do you allow doctors to inject it, which is even worse? It's going into a closed system. It is now going to wreak havoc over the course of your child's lifetime if it doesn't end it very prematurely.
Well, before we talk about what you did and what you've been doing for your son and how he's doing now, let's kind of talk about that question for a moment, because our society has done such a great job over the years to elevate certain professions and yes, create this sense of hero worship. And I've been a teacher at the university level for my career, and the idea that teacher knows best, and we can't go until you finish your homework. And what did the teacher say? And teachers are in charge of the children.
Right.
And then the heroes, we were even told over the last 3 years, you know, there were all sorts of signs outside of hospitals, heroes work here. Well, yeah. My mom was an emergency room nurse for 40 years. She never considered herself a hero. She was not in a war zone. She studied to become a nurse. She chose that profession. She went to work in the ER. She did not believe in the mainstream medical merry-go-round of, you know, prescription drugs forever, but she was all about trauma medicine, fix them up, move them out. Yep. And she actually, you know, Laura, because I grew up in a home with a nurse as a mom, I never did go to the doctor. She actually had a very negative view of the medical industry. Mm-hmm. She did not trust doctors. She had I think a lot of nurses watching this are shaking their heads saying, yes, I know what you mean, Peggy, that the point that I'm trying to make is that people, everyday people, will look at doctors as if they are the gods. They are the heroes. You can't question them. You can't research. You can't have a conversation. You just do what the doctor says. And there are some others in society, like government and, you know, rock stars and athletes and celebrities, that our society has done such a good job of elevating them. Yes. wrongly. And I have spoken out about this many, many times. So I think that is one reason why the parents are not questioning. And what do you think is going on? Do you think it's fear? Do you think they feel kind of bullied in the doctor's office? You mentioned that parents are, they have that maternal instinct, or in the case of the father.
And
what happens with, we know it's enriching these companies that are producing these materials. We know that it is removing productive members from the society, like your son. It is preventing you from doing other things because your role now is nurturing and taking care of your son, who is an adult that needs your care. And then they are dependent on all of these other medical things for the rest of their life. It's like a Ponzi scheme or a con game. I don't even know the right description.
I think there's a funneling, you know, it's, you, little things happened. All of a sudden, being pregnant was medicalized, and you need a doctor, and you have a baby in a hospital instead of you have the woman in your community and the local midwife help you and assist you during a home birth. So we medicalized pregnancy, and then that became the norm. Like, ooh, you're having a home birth. Oh, you have to have it in a hospital. So then the doctors become, you know, that's one of the most important moments in a parent's lifetime is the birth of their children. And so, and that's also when they get you with that first, the first shots, the vitamin K, which is not innocuous, and the hepatitis B shot, because you're kind of, first of all, if you're the woman, you're exhausted. You might be in a little bit of shock. You're tired. You're exhausted. And they just come in and start doing things to your baby. There's no informed consent. They just start jabbing. And if you should say, whoa, whoa, what are you doing? You know, this person, you're feeling a little indebted to them. They just delivered your child and, oh, your child needs this. And they don't explain what in the world they're doing or how absolutely your child does not need a hepatitis vaccine or a vitamin K shot within minutes of being birth, perchance never. And so you're kind of, so they've gone to the doctor because everyone tells them you have to have a hospital birth. You're nuts, you know, not to do that. And then the doctors start saying, well, these are the things we do here. And then a lot of hospitals just start instituting more and more things as standard of care. So they don't even need to get consent. You have to actually refuse. There's not an opting in, but you have to know to like refuse certain things. And then your baby might get sick right from the get-go because they've had all of this medical intervention right there. And they've had these two shots of poison and the antibiotic eye drops, and they haven't had a quiet, peaceful start to life. So then it's not uncommon that they get their first ear infection or sick or eczema. So you're back to the doctor. And at the same time, you're taking them for that. Oh, it's time for your 2 month shots and your 4 month shots and your 6 month shots and your second flu shot at 7 months and your 9 month shots and your 12 month shots and your 15 month shots and your 18 month shots and your 24 month shots and every year thereafter. And what person could even withstand that barrage of heinousness? And in the meantime, if you look at the history of most kids, they're getting sick between all these shots. They're getting their first ear infections. They're getting eczema. They're developing food allergies. They're having seizures. They are having either chronic constipation or chronic diarrhea. And the health issues just start. So then you're funneled into this medical system. Now you feel dependent. Oh, my kid has insulin-dependent diabetes. We have to be on. It's one thing. My child has seizures now. We're on anti-seizure meds. It just starts the cascade of never ending. I call it, you're on the treadmill. You can't get off that treadmill, but you never needed to get on. But now, to make sure it's appearing that these children are born with all these things, we're vaccinating pregnant women. Okay, the pregnant women are now recommended to get 5 vaccines. The Tdap, which is 3 vaccines, tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis, the flu vaccine, and now the cooties injection. So that's 5 for a pregnant woman. And so now these kids are damaged not only from the epigenetic damage that their parents have endured from their 80 vaccines, but now it's starting in utero and it's going to be continued on the day of birth and again at these regular frequent intervals. And on top of the heinous, literally heinous,
yes,
ingredients being injected into a closed system that are going to wreak havoc in every system from your child's brain to the organs, to the immune system, the nervous system. On top of that, we've also turned off our maternal instincts, how we let our babies be hurt and our babies as we are holding them and they trust us. So think about that. If I came up and pinched your baby you would take me out or you'd have your husband take me out. But we sit there and pin our babies down and let them be jabbed in every limb they have. Sometimes at catch-up appointments, children will get 13 vaccines.
I can't, it's just it's intolerable.
Eight needles.
It's
child abuse. I've written about that in my, my first presentation, the one listed as Weston A. Price Foundation speech. I talk about how that is child abuse and, both by the doctor and so that's an important section. It's a little controversial, but if you really read it and think about it, it is child abuse.
Yes.
You wouldn't let me hurt your baby. If you peeked in my dining room window, if you were walking by, taking your dog for a walk, and you looked in my window and you saw my husband and me with our 2-month-old baby, if you saw us holding it down, it's flailing, it's screaming, it's beet red, and we're jabbing it with sharp objects, and it's screaming harder till it's so beet red and it just almost practically goes unconscious from disbelief that you're allowing this. But if you walk by and saw me and my husband doing that, again, you'd whip out your cell phone and call 911. But somehow it's okay when someone in a white coat does it. This is where we need to just plug our brains back in. We have been so indoctrinated, dumbed down, told that there's an expert for everything. We can't do anything. You know, we can't take care of our children's healthcare. We can't teach them. We can't, we're supposed to delegate everything. Can't raise them, got to hire the nanny. We've got to come back to taking charge of our own lives and realizing we are competent. We have maternal instincts. We have a brain. We need to go back to using them.
What you described is just so distressing. It is stomach turning. And I hope that everyone listening to this is able to feel the outrage that is a normal response to this absolutely heinous is the word you used. It is child abuse. It is a ritualized child abuse. Yes. People are literally brain mind controlled and manipulated into doing this. And we all, whether we are parents, grandparents, childless, young adults at every age, we have got to educate people, share this video, share Laura's amazing writings that are so articulate and compelling. It is so stunning to me, Laura, because years ago, and let me just make this comment, then I would like to have an inspiring part of your story about what you've done with your son and how he is doing today. But years ago, when this was happening in California, and we'll talk about that after we hear about the update on your son, about your fight in California. And I'll be honest, when all of this was going on in terms of removing religious exemptions and personal exemptions to the cocktails in the public schools, I was so distressed. It was so stomach turning to me that I had sleepless nights. I was not on the front lines of that fight. I was praying fervently and I was supporting those who were doing it. It was almost as if I was being required to view, you know, animal cruelty videos. I literally personally could not do it. I was not equipped at that time. God saw fit to put me on the front lines now against all of the cooties and to speak out against your rights. But it has come full circle. You were speaking out about this years ago, telling and sounding the alarm and fighting doggedly, speaking of fighting so ferociously to protect children in California. Bring us the update on your child and then let's go back to what happened in California. And I think that will be very interesting for people to hear.
So for 25-ish years, I personally ran an intensive behavioral program for Ryan. I hired and trained tutors. I did work with an amazing consultant for most of those years. And we were able to teach Ryan quite a bit. He has a lot of children and adults with autism have splinter skills. So they may excel at something and then drop down here to the, you know, a 2-year-old level in another area. Ryan, he's 29 years old now. He is 6'4" tall, 185 pounds, but he's still like he's my forever 5-year-old. He is sweet. He snuggles. He likes to climb in bed with us every morning. He jumps on his trampoline every day for as long as we'll let him. He loves to be read to. He can read. He has a decent vocabulary. He is not conversational. He just, conversation has too many nuances. I mean, he can answer basic questions, but he cannot converse back and forth quickly. There's people don't know the words and phrases he knows, and they, if he doesn't answer right away, then they repeat the question, and he's just kind of, he's not conversational, but he can play many games. He's great at puzzles. He loves using his computer. He loves to travel. He is sweet, sweet, sweet. He loves to swim. He loves to swim in the ocean with his dad, my husband. So he has many skills that he can do. He likes art projects. The books he likes are children's books. So everything he does is fairly childlike. So that's why I say we have our forever child with us, and he will live with us until we die. And then his siblings, we hope, will take care of him. Our goal is hopefully that he will never set foot in any type of group home or institution. We hope that there's always family or loved ones alive who will take him in and care for him. And he is helpful. He is just sweet. He's just, if you meet him, he's just a little bundle of joy. He's been a lot of hard work too, and he's still, I do all his personal hygiene every day. I shave him every morning. I let him brush his teeth in the morning, but I brush and floss him every night. And also after lunch, I make all of his meals. Now he will help and run and get things out for me, and he'll clear the dishes, but I'm in charge of all the food he eats. I do his laundry. He helps me fold, but he still requires constant supervision. We could never leave him home alone. Not that he might not survive, but if anything happened, we'd be liable. We're his guardians. We need to make sure for his safety. If something unexpected happened, we don't know exactly what he would do. He is like a child. So he's always with an adult, and it has to be someone who knows him well. It can't be a random person like, oh, can't you just hire a babysitter? No, you have to know Ryan well, know what he knows and doesn't know and what he likes to do, and not do anything that might upset him. You know, if he gets yelled at or something, he can get upset. So it's a lifelong commitment. And, you know, my husband is great. We share the responsibility. I'm the main caretaker. My husband's still working. But so one big thing that has changed since we moved from California to Virginia is that I've not hired any help. So 3+ years now with no help. But there are days where it would be great to find someone to hire and train. And there are other days where after 25, 26 years of people in my home, 6 days a week, I'm loving not having people in my home.
Well, so, as we were scheduling
it's a both and, it's like, yeah. There's probably some happy medium there, and we have yet to find it. But when we moved to Virginia, it was the day we moved was the 2 weeks to flatten the curve day, March 16th, 2020. And people were afraid. Even if I wanted to hire someone, no one would have come to an interview. People were so frightened and acting so strangely. So then I just didn't. And we've kind of, it's actually been beneficial. Ryan has actually become much more helpful and more independent just by not having tutors all the time and not having such structured life. So he actually has made quite a few gains, and he hasn't lost any skills. So praise the Lord. Could my husband and I use a break every now and then? Sure, that'd be lovely. But we've got to find that right person and do some training. So hopefully in the next couple of years, we'll find someone to help out on occasion. Well, so he's forever dependent. And when we go, his two siblings will be responsible.
Yes, we need to
a myriad of ways.
Yes, we need to add in infertility into that as well.
Yes, we do, Peggy. And
I do not know
a long time about that, but you and I both know there are infertility doctors and clinics everywhere. Infertility is a huge and growing and heartbreaking problem for the couples who face it. And
there's not a young woman. I do not know a young woman who has not struggled with that. Every young woman I know. Close
and I will chime in and agree
right.
Pretty much.
I do not know one that has not had problems, issues in that area.
And that's not normal.
No,
that's
it's not normal.
Normal.
No, not at all. And so that's another of their arrows that they throw, right, is to not only damage the individuals, but prevent reproduction.
And I have a second presentation I did that's called Why Is This Legal?
Okay.
And so my first presentation was in 2016. It's listed under Weston A. Price Foundation speech. My second one was in 2018, and that's called Why Is This Legal? And I do cover, that's one of my 30 points about why is it legal to destroy, you know, the fertility. And that is, I don't know which presentation of mine, if I could only recommend one to a person, I don't know which I choose because they're different, but they're so complementary. So I will meet young people and I will say, it's my one wish and my prayer that you would watch both of these presentations. You can watch them, you can read them. You know, the Age of Autism links have both the transcript and the video. And I am convinced, I am convinced that if couples would sit down and truly watch both of them, which are 80 minutes each, that there is no way, no way they would ever, ever allow their child to be injected. But if they don't, they're not going to know. And there's other resources too, but I'm just that convinced about my two presentations that if people would give them the attention that they deserve in order to protect their children and possible early death and cancer, we haven't thrown cancer in there yet, but when I grew up, there were not child oncology units in every hospital. What are we doing that is giving 1 and 2 year olds cancer? Well, there's a lot of carcinogens in vaccines. And guess what vaccines are not tested for? They're not tested for carcinogenic, mutagenic, or fertility effects. So they don't want to know. They already know, but they don't want us to know. So they don't, even if they've done the studies, we don't know about them, but they also just might not do them. They're, on each vaccine and package insert, it will say not tested for carcinogenic, mutagenic, or fertility issues. Yet, well, mandated. Participate in society, to go to, and in California, it wasn't just public school. When that bill, SB 277, first came out, it applied to all children 0 through 18 in the state of California for daycare, school, be it public, private, and it included homeschoolers. So I did my first rally speech opposing that. If you look on that list of my speeches and articles, it was the one dated 4/18/4/8/15, April 8th, 15. And I gave it before the carve out for homeschoolers. And it applied to every child. And I gave the example, like, this is where we're headed, that police will come to your house and force vaccinate or bring the doctor in the car to force vaccinate because it will be required of you. There is no out. If you have children in the state of California, there will be no out. And if you don't comply, they will send, you know,
the sheriff, child protective services.
They will force it. And then a carve out for homeschoolers. And Senator Pan, in 2018 tried to do a children's bill of rights, but he couldn't find a co-sponsor, thank goodness. And one of the 10 things on that was a child has the right to proper health care and a proper education. Well, we know where those were headed. That's proper health care was going to be, you know, at the time, all 72 vaccines, and proper education was going to be you had to go to public school, and to go, you also had to have the 72 vaccines. So at some point, I do think they'll circle back and come after homeschoolers in California. I'm surprised they haven't. I think too many other things happened the last 3 years.
Well, many people left the state as you did. And your story about Ryan is a story that is shared by thousands and thousands of families. And the greatest tragedy is that it can be prevented. So, Laura,
yes. None of this needed to happen. And that I remember when I first spoke, it was something in the end of the 1990s. I can't remember what it was, but I thought for sure I'm telling people, I wrote to Oprah Winfrey and tried to get on her show. That was a big deal at the time. I was told by her producer that autism wasn't, what was the word? Not gory, but it wasn't engaging. It wouldn't capture the audience. They like burn victims instead. Literally, this is what I was told by the producer of the Oprah show. Or one of them. But I thought, this is going to be great. I'm going to help stop this in its tracks. Once I and other parents start talking about this, it will stop immediately. No one wants babies to be harmed and poisoned. And that was my biggest shock and eye opener. Like, it's out there. Parents everywhere across the nation, across the globe are saying what happened to their kids after vaccines. Why aren't we being listened to? Why won't the media interview us? Why, when they do they speak about us only pejoratively and dismiss us? Why do doctors, they don't want to hear, you know, my doctor, our children's pediatrician did not want to hear. And I touched base with her. I wrote her a 5-page letter a couple of years after the fact when I was no longer seeing her about, this is what happened to my son in your office. No response.
So parents.
Oh, no, actually, that's not true. When I called her, she said, I was trying to approach her thinking she would be open to learning. I said, can I ask you just a very simple question? Why do you think these vaccines that you are giving to your patients day in and day out are safe? And her answer was, because the pharmaceutical rep tells me they are. And I quote.
Laura, can parents actually go after the doctors who injected their children? Have there been any cases like that where the parents
go? No, you can't. They are anyone who manufactures or administers vaccines are not liable since 1986.
I didn't realize even those doing the injecting. That's just stunning. You know what I would like to do, Laura? Let's make this a 2-part interview because we've got so much that I want to cover talking about the here and now. I mean, where we're going in the future in terms of what we've been through with cooties, what the presidential candidates are talking about, because that's on everybody's mind, the concept of public health, which is a misnomer, and a few other things that we want to talk about. Mm-hmm. So stick with me here, friends. I will have a link for Laura's very compelling presentations. You can also read her articles at The Age of Autism. I will have that for you. Please read, share, and help stop this heinous devastation, this intentional damaging of our most vulnerable. And they also are going after the adults. They're going after the elderly. And so we will hear more.
Feed us to grave.
Absolutely. And even before, they're going after the pregnant women so that they can start it at the earliest possible time. It's absolutely.
They're born with it then.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So stick with me, Laura. Friends that are viewing now, thank you so much for being on this interview. I know there's a lot of heavy stuff that was covered here, but it is important. And we are capable of handling this, of learning about it, and of taking action. And we'll be talking about that in our part 2 interview. You can always find me over at thehealthyamerican.org.